It's Frank Greenfall. You were saying the population weren't supposed to know you existed.
So these open coal wagons full of prisoners in the pyjamas weren't really supposed to be shown to the public. The main problem was, of course, thirst. And as soon as we stopped, we were not allowed to put our head above the edge of the wagon. I was too small to reach it anyway. The only thing that we did have, one of the guys, for reasons which I can't remember, I think he must have been medically connected, had a few vitamin pills. And he gave me one or two, which must have helped a great deal. And then an engine driver gave us some water, which was warm and full of oil, which helped to hydrate us. We've been a lot of people that are there. And I once managed to get onto the shoulders of the guys next to me, who were sitting on the floor on the wagon, and asked for some snow. And all the soldiers, mostly soldiers with us, not the SS. The SS supervised it. The soldier passed me some container full of snow. And then I put up my head up again. The SS appeared from somewhere and took a shot at me. But I saw him. I dived. He hit the metal ledge of the top of the wagon. Unfortunately, ricocheted elsewhere. People were, of course, dying like flies. People had diarrhea on the march to Blyvitch Try. And being still reasonably civilized human beings, they wanted to make themselves scarce by the side of the road. And the column was followed by SS. Whereas the sides of the column were largely guarded by soldiers. And front and back were SS. And any straggler got shot. And I had a very good friend next to me, name forgotten. And he was on the outside, I was on the Mexican side. And he just got totally exhausted, stumbled. And before he fell to the ground, he was dead, shot. So to be very careful. If I now tell you that I was walking a sort of reaching distance behind a soldier who had a, what nowadays called a bum bag, with an apple protruding. When I got the apple out without getting shot, without him knowing, you can imagine that we are fairly well trained. And eventually, we managed to extract from the soldiers some food on the march. None while we were in the wagon. They had nothing to eat, except for that one occasion when the people threw us a few bits of bread. For 10 days, nothing. The one thing that we were short of in the original Fürstentumberg camp were laces. I had my boots, but no laces. And the string that you could get was paper. So, because I was in better circumstances, the paper broke daily. And of course, you were walking, marching in snow and slush. So if that broke, you'd lose your boots. So what we used was wire. But of course, again, it was deficient wire. And I woke up one morning in the wagon without my boots on. I first thought one of the fellows had stolen my miniatures out. case I'd have killed him. But they just came off and I frostbite. Severe frostbite. And indirectly, what saved my life. When we finally got to Fürstenberg, I could hardly walk. And we had to walk a long, long way uphill. And I was bleeding like a stuck pig, because some of the toes had already dropped off, some were dropping off. I was walking on them. But I knew perfectly well that I couldn't say that I couldn't walk, because that would have been extermination on the spot. But somehow they put me to a so-called hospital, where we were to a bunk. The first night somebody tried to rape me. So I told him if he tries to do that again, I'll kill him. So that was the end of that. And there was a charming, charming French doctor. I think that he was called Limier. I tried to find him after the war and didn't succeed. He spoke very little German. And nothing else. Or at least he pretended. Now, I spoke fluent German, Czech, then some Polish, and he acquired me as his interpreter. So he said. And unbelievable though it is, he persuaded the Germans that I needed an egg a day to get me fit to get back to work and act as an interpreter. And I got one egg a day in the worst part of the war. And that again just balanced the protein a little bit.
This is where?
In Dora, just the Nordhausen. That's where they made the B2. Now, I never worked in Dora. I got there on the 28th of January, I think, and was liberated on the 11th of April. And throughout all that time, I was in the hospital wing, protected by this French doctor. Germans came out, and any incurable patients were immediately removed and predictably exterminated. Two people escaped and 150 people were hanged. You know, the usual sort of jokes. The other thing that I was by then very interested in medicine and debated with a French doctor whether I should become a diplomat or a surgeon after the war. And he took me to the operating theater and I assisted at operations. Lying on an operating table myself because I couldn't put my legs down. And learned quite a lot of medicine. And then when I was sent out of the hospital just towards the end of the war part of my stay there, I was put in charge of the provisions, which meant that I had a bed instead of being part of a bunk. By this time, the Germans had fled. And only those who couldn't be transported were left behind. Now we again should have been exterminated, as the usual procedure. But what can be moved to work is moved, and the rest get exterminated. But again, you see, we had knives, didn't we? In the operating there. I had buyer that, I don't know whether that was all that from. So I was in charge, I mean I was the only one who was equipped to defend. And I was surrounded, my bed was surrounded with food which the boys had got from the German larder, sacks of rice and things like that. Sugar. For the first time, it's your food. And I virtually didn't sleep. Because, of course, that was in danger of being filched by other prisoners. And I was a quartermaster and I distributed family. So I had to threaten the lives of others in order to protect the majority. And I didn't have to attack anybody. And then, we heard much later that virtually all the people who had been transported away from Dora had died one way or another. Either they'd been killed by the Germans or perished in air attacks by the Allies because they thought that it was a German military transport. And you see, Nordhausen was on the line of Kassel, Dresden, Halle, and towards, well, virtually throughout our stay, but more so, well, longer it went on, we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flying fortresses over our heads and lighting bombers. And when they came from their mission, they couldn't see what they were bombing anymore. They dropped a few bombs on us, or at least on Dora. So we were in and out of beds, under the beds, and so on. And we had to deal with the casualties, particularly from the lightning bombers, who had the 2 centimeter guns. And they could do quite some nasty damage. And I remember a guy who came in, was shot in the foot. Now, how the hell it happened, nobody will ever explain. He must have been lying down, and the bullet went in one side, did a perfect dissection of his foot, and came out the other side, and all the surgeon had to do was to look at it, clean it up, stitch it, perfectly functional foot. And another one, a bullet went into the stomach and came out at the back and didn't do any damage either. So, as I say, I learned some medicine in the process. And we were liberated very late because Nordhausen is in a bowl, it's in the Harz Mountains. We're sort of halfway up. We could see the town, and we could hear the war going all around us. But we were apparently unapproachable from the west, and it was also during the time when there was haggling, as we know now, between the west and the east as to who takes what. So the war was a bit stationary. And eventually, they, as far as I could understand, they approached us from the east. They had to go around to get to us. And we were liberated by the French, part of the Canadian French part of the Allies. Now again, because I could speak French, I remember the padre came and spoke to me in French, and again took me under his wing. With a sort of religious debate first, and I told him that I will cooperate with him as long as he keeps his religion to himself, and I will keep my atheistic views to myself. And basically, we were then stuck until middle of May. And then, suddenly, very short notice, they came with lorries, well, the buses for us. We were taken plant.
Had there been any revenge against the guards in Nordhausen?
No, because, well, there may have been done in the camp proper, but not in the hospital, when we were not fit to move. I mean, I couldn't walk. I was limited. I weighed just over 4 stone. And of course, my legs were, my feet were gone. But I was assigned German prisoner of war, soldier, private, who was my horse. And he carried me all over the place. And we had a fairly reasonable relationship, I must say. I mean, he once tried to tell me what should be done. I told him, well, if you don't like to keep your mouth shut, I'll shut it for you permanently. That sort of thing. But
this was after,
by the time I was armed, of course.
This was after liberation?
That's after liberation, yes. And he was assigned to me, and he was my property, so to speak. And he complained to me how badly he had been doing the war. Or how badly he had been done to during the war. But he got wise fairly quickly. So, I mean, he was a poor son. No point taking revenge on him. I mean, there was this sort of feeling that you'd like to exterminate the whole German nation so that this sort of thing couldn't happen again. But you realize it wasn't possible. And once you started dealing with individuals who were, in many ways, victims as well, you left it. And I was given a pair of Canadian army boots, which were size 45, and of course, without toes, my feet much smaller than even the normal 40 or whatever I would have been. So I put these on, not so much as to have a pair of shoes on, but because I realized that was a barter. Wherever I went, I mean, fantastic big leather, big skin. And they were all purpose. You could mountaineer them, you could ski them, and you could march them, and amateur sports. The joke was that when I got to climb, I couldn't take them off. Odina. I sat in the bus for 3 days. And when we got to Prague, though the war had officially finished, I was put into a very old and famous palace right underneath the castle, which was converted into a reception convalescent area. And in the gardens, I was still shooting the Germans throughout my stay there, because the Germans lived in the sewers. Used to come out at night and try to survive by stealing. So there were also still some fairly hard elements thinking that they could rescue the German Reich. And at the end of it all, by very rough calculation, I think at an optimistic estimate, I am one of perhaps 2 survivors out of 110,000.
Once you got to Prague, where did you live and what were your plans?
Well, initial plans were to get in touch with my father, which of course impossible. I sent a message to my last place of residence before we went away, that I was alive. But to my great astonishment, 2 days later, my maternal aunt and her daughter appeared. To tell me that not only she but her husband survived, and the daughter's husband survived. I don't know whether it's unique, but it must be fairly unique. And they all emigrated to Canada eventually after 1948 when the communists came. They rehabilitated. So I moved out of, I stayed in the never know whether it was the Lobkowitz or the Waldstein Palace. It was one of those palaces there. To their flat, whereby I'd been given a flat. I was given a pension from the state. I registered at the Seventh Sarna Gymnasium of Studies to commence at the beginning of the new autumn term in 1945, but in the meantime I had spent, I think, a good month in Český Dub, which was a convalescent home out in the country, and they really did very well. I mean, we didn't have any special treatment, we just had food and so on, and I knew that the people in Prague had hardly anything. Really, food was a premium. And the boys, because I still couldn't walk, except for a few yards, the boys got a dog cart for me. And I sat in that. They pulled me from farm to farm. We asked for eggs. We were given many hundreds of eggs, which we brought back to the convalescents on cooked and distributed them between the poorer members of the population. And I finished up with a great big box, God knows how many dozens of eggs. And I decided to take these to Prague. So they lifted me and the eggs into a bus which was bursting at the seams. And of course it was an old rickety thing. I was doing a juggling act, those eggs. And then they took me to the mainline station. Now, as soon as I appeared, I mean, the trains had to be seen to be delivered, always, not only just crowded, but people were hanging out. And the Russian soldiers were on the roofs. And if you had a watch on, they probably confiscated it. I mean, the jokes that they had watches all the way up their forearms are not jokes. Давай часы, if you didn't. I didn't have a watch, but I had eggs. They emptied the half of the compartment, well, half of the carriage, so that I could go onto a comfortable bench where they put me up. It's the grandest thing. I mean, that's how people behave. It's fantastic. With the eggs on my lap. They got me off the train on the main station in Prague, Rosalovnovnitsy, carried me out, put me into one of these horse-drawn droshkes. All for nothing, of course. I didn't pay. Train tickets, cinema tickets, nothing, just my pass. And this guy took me, again for nothing, quite a long distance, to my aunt's flat, where I arrived with these several dozen eggs in a box, and not one was broken. Which was a sort of example of what the how you were regarded. I could go anywhere when I was a little better. When I returned from Český Dub, I could walk sufficiently to cross a road. So I would go from the flat to a tram, or buses were very scarce. And go to the center of the town, go to pictures. And of course, Western pictures. Can you imagine that? Queues. I walked to the front of the queues, showed my card, was promptly taken to the best seat in the cinema, didn't pay.
Is this because you were a cancer survivor?
because I was regarded as, war hero or what to be regarded as is. I mean, I got onto a tram and everybody got up. And people offered me money and I didn't take it. Because they were worse off than I was. And my uncle, somehow, I don't know how they did it. Because telephone communications didn't exist. I don't know whether it was possible to telegram or whatever. Got in touch with my father to say that I was alive. That was the first communication my father had for something like 4 years. And then we communicated by letter. Still couldn't telephone. And then my male cousin from the paternal side, who also came to England before the war, or just at the beginning of the war, and was brought up royally in Scotland by Laird at the Fetters School, so he joined right at the end of the war. He was 4.5 years older than I was. The Czech army, that's the British Czech army. I mean, he always says that he was in Dunkirk. Yes, he was in the second Dunkirk and just walked through. And he arrived in Prague, found that I was alive, came to see me. And he then discovered that there was a transport of 300 children or youth. All were orphaned via England. And they were not supposed to stay here. I think it was a transitional passport. They were either going to the States, I think most of them were going to Israel. But they had only 297 people. And the passport was for 300. And I got with Otto and Felix. And I think perhaps there was a few, maybe 93 or 95. I can't remember. It was Otto, Felix, myself, and possibly another one or two. I can't remember the others. We got onto the transport to make up the numbers.
We also said that Otto is Otto Yakubovich.
That's right. And we came to England, we landed in Carlisle, it was still blackout. And I was awfully ill on the plane. Of course, we came in the belly of Lancaster, because the visa was for children to be brought over after the British Air Force had escorted the Czech airmen back to Czechoslovakia. You know, the Czech airmen who fought in the Battle of Britain. So they came back with empty planes, and we were virtually in the Monarch compartment. And I poisoned my guts the day before we went away, and I was all the way. We landed in the military airfield.